Problem one from the quiz. Oh. 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 What functional group is this? Acid. And what two things do you need to make an ester? And we have that in this molecule, don't we? Which is why it cyclizes. What happens when you make a cyclic ester? What's that called?
Lactone.
A lactone. This mechanism makes a lactone. Why? Protonate. Which means reversible. Open. Which, since that's just resonance, I'm going to save space and do the attack at the same time. Because you form a six-membered ring, which that's a thermodynamically favorable process, and so it happens. I just lost a carbon, didn't I? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yes, Dr. Gray can count to 5. And we're halfway through the reaction. Where you have another protonate. One, two, three, four, five. You're not as active. I had one class one year, even before I'd finished writing the structure, they wouldn't even give me the chance to put the lone pairs in. Lone pairs, Dr. Gray! You forgot your bracket on your residence again, Dr. Gray! Lone. Yeah, actually, now you made me. No, that's the right number. That's the right number. Lone pairs. Okay. He was unfortunately right. Oh my gosh. Won't you say that class was canceled? And deprotonate to make a lactone. Why do you have to remove water? Because this is fully reversible. And by removing water, which is a product, by Le Chatelier's principle, that makes more of the product formed. We don't have time to go over the other questions today, but I know everybody was, what is it? And that's almost as bad as forgetting or putting your acid in your saponification. Yes. Clarification, please.
Sorry. You're like skipping over resonance structures a lot when you do the lone pairs.
Okay. Of course. I showed it individually, step by step by step, because it makes a convenient acronym: protonate, open attack, deprotonate. And even though the exact mechanism steps change, you can use that acronym in a bunch of reactions. So it makes it easier as an instructional tool. But when you're writing it on your own selves and you have some proficiency, then as I've commented a couple of times, resonance is not a step. So you can combine resonance with anything anywhere, and it's correct. Of course I won't take points off. Questions? Because you wouldn't be doing anything wrong. That's the thing. All right, so we'll discuss more of the quiz later. But today we're back to alpha chemistry. Now, let me touch base on a couple of issues. We've already had our discussion on alpha protons, and that was in lab, but I think I was careful to say even on that day that that portion of our discussion was lecture, correct? If I somehow forgot for section one, that part of your lab lecture is actually, so I'm just going to do it like this. Insert alpha acidity lecture here. And so now it's officially a lecture topic. So you have those pKa values that you're working on, right? All nine, wasn't it, compounds I had on the board that day, you could quote, you. If I gave you a pop quiz right now, boy, look at that panic some of you just got. Pop quiz, just for Kevin, the pKa values. What is the pKa of a dialdehyde, 3-carbon dialdehyde? What is the pKa of that middle alpha proton? Kevin. Five? You're just going to believe blindly someone else's answer? But that person's right for you, fortunately for you. How about a diketone? Nine. How about a diester? 13. How about an ester? 24, 25. That's right. Better be working on those values. We've already had the aldol condensation. Would anybody like me to recover the aldol condensation? Yes. Okay. So I'm going to say, though, that I already well described the mixed aldol condensation. However, since that's related to our lab, let me make this clarification. Mixed aldol theory is a lab topic, which means it will be discussed on your lab quiz. But the aldol condensation itself, I'm going to mention again here, but maybe in terms of organization, I'll bring it a little bit later in the lecture. Because in terms of lecture, we started with alpha halogenation, and we haven't seen the magic of condensations yet. So let's build up to that, because aside from alpha halogenation and the aldol condensation, section one now knows that there's such a thing as a Michael addition. And if you take a Michael and an aldol and do both of them, that's called a Robinson annulation under certain circumstances. Aside from that, we also have alpha alkylation, not halogenation. And we also have the Claisen and Diekmann condensations, and we have a storenamine synthesis. So we have several reactions that we need to cover. So I know I still need to go back and give you the version that actually has page numbers or section numbers, but how many of you have started reading chapter 19, the alpha chemistry chapter? Oh my gosh, you mean the hardest chapter of the whole quarter you haven't even started reading? The chapter that's going to make the first test the painful thing that it could be if you don't start working towards it? Because acids and esters and amides and all that, that's simple. It's a lot of stuff, but it's simple. This is trickier in its synthesis. So I hope that the various ways that I scare you haven't dulled you to me scaring you, because these condensations are rougher, and you got your warning to be working on them. So if, as long as there is not a class cancellation on Friday, when I come back and ask the question, how many of you read that chapter, I'm hoping that the honest answer is a whole lot more hands go up. So somebody summarize for me what reagents we use for alpha halogenation. No, not somebody, because even though I didn't warn you about this question, we're still all supposed to be reading. So, who's looking away from me most right now? I don't call in the back rows enough, I think, do I? So, Kevin? No, but Kevin, is that what you said? All right, I'll give it once. Kevin, alpha halogenation. How many times does it happen in acid conditions versus in base conditions?
In acid conditions, it happens one to one and like three times in the other.
Okay. And it does only happen one time in the acid, and it happens potentially multiple times in their basic conditions. It doesn't always, and that's why I wanted to spend a little time on the topic today. So alpha halogenation. I'm not going to rewrite the mechanisms because we already did that. But let's remind ourselves that because there is a carbocation, why am I writing bromine? There's a carbocation that needs to form. And although your book discusses it more in terms of the basicity of the carbonyl oxygen, but still the end result being is the same. After this reaction happens once, because of the mechanism of this reaction and the presence of the bromine, it's not favorable for it to happen again. So, just a reminder, under acidic conditions, halogenation only occurs once. Then under basic conditions, here, let me go and label this. This is acid here, and now base. Under base conditions, you'll have multiple reaction. Because after you put one halogen on, you make the alpha position more acidic. The beginning of that mechanism depends on the removal of an alpha proton. So you make it more acidic, you make it easier for it to come off, you make it easier for the reaction to occur, so it keeps on going and going and going. But if you had not a methyl ketone, but only an ethyl ketone, then when you do the reaction, you can multiply halogenate the product. But this is not the haloform reaction, because we didn't form, in this case, bromoform, because I'm showing bromine. Why? Because on that one position, there are no more alpha hydrogens to pull off, so you can't substitute anymore, and this is not a good enough leaving group with only the two bromines on it. So under basic conditions, it will do as many iterations as it can, but that means, therefore, if you don't have a methyl group, you don't always necessarily go all the way through to the haloform reaction. How about the left side? I am going to have to go back and study because I'm trying to think on the spot whether these bromines, even though they make this position more acidic, what would they do to that position since it's on the other side of the carbonyl? Let me figure out what the answer is before I try to give it to you. For here, though, only two halogenations occur since only two alpha hydrogens are present. Now let me make this note. The haloform reaction is a special case of alpha halogenation involving specifically methyl ketones. So in other words, molecules of this form. And as a reminder, what happens is if you start with something like acetone and you react it under the appropriate conditions, you're going to get to some point where you have that tri-substituted carbon. And here's the important point. HCX3, whether X is bromine, iodine, or chlorine, is acidic enough that its conjugate can be expelled by attack of hydroxide. expelled. Meaning exactly what I showed you in class the other day, that if hydroxide were to attack the carbonyl and push it open, that portion of it is reversible. And I'll look up some pKa values for these haloforms before next lecture, so we can have a more concrete number to discuss. But the point is, the pKa of this compound is close enough to water that hydroxide is close enough in base strength to the group that would be kicked off here. So in other words, once you form the tetrahedral intermediate, yes, you could kick hydroxide off, but it's also either equally, nearly equally, or in some cases, even more likely that it's this carbon that gets expelled. Which the idea of breaking a carbon-carbon bond like this is a new concept. But realize that at some point, if we get to this level of depth in condensations, that condensations are often reversible, which means you'll again have carbons being expelled as leaving groups. So I'm just throwing that idea out there that it's unusual from what you've seen in the past, but we're entering a new realm of chemistry now. Now this one portion of the step, one last time that I'll cover this, is reversible, but it can't really happen in real life because as soon as this gets kicked off, the haloform ion, whatever it is still basic. And so you get an instant neutralization that's on paper reversible in that all equilibria are technically reversible, but the pKa differences are so huge here that it's effectively non-reversible. So there's the review of alpha halogenation. Any questions about that reaction? Then I'm going to follow textbook order for the moment and show you the reaction it presents next, which is alpha alkylation. Because this brings up another topic that we've seen in bits and pieces of, but this is going to be a different presentation, about base reversibility. Because imagine that you could form an enolate. And right now, I'll just say base. And I'll say M for metal. That's an enolate ion. And in the reactions we've seen so far, we've used things like hydroxide as base. Because the hydroxide would end up not having some side reaction with whatever other reagents we had present. For example, the mixed aldol condensation we did. There was only one compound in that reaction that had alpha protons. So if we threw any base that was strong enough, that's the only reaction that likely was going to occur. But this is now a different situation, because independent of how this enolate formed, if we could isolate this enolate, the carbon ends up being very nucleophilic and very basic, which if you had a primary substrate, then that's the same kind of story we had with acetylide ions, ions made from triple bonded compounds. So if you threw an alkyl halide or alkyl tosylate, a sulfonate in general, then this enolate can attack and do SN2. Now there is some restriction. This is a fairly strong base. This is going to be a slightly stronger base than hydroxide. And so elimination is a consideration. And so if you have a very hindered primary position, you may still have elimination possible. But this is often exploited to do alpha alkylation. So very simple mechanism, and one that we'll return to when we get to the most beautiful of the reactions in terms of synthesis, the malonic ester synthesis. So we got a little ways before we get there. Now, let's come back to this issue of the base. Because if I used hydroxide, that might be problematic in this case. Because residual hydroxide that you would need to have in solution to make that enolate would react with the alkyl halide just as easily. Why would we need hydroxide in solution? Because what is the pKa of that ketone roughly? 19. You need to know these things quickly because these numbers are going to come up over and over again in this chapter. What is the pKa of water? So if I wrote this reaction, what kind of arrow would I put in between? Okay. Is it reversible? It has to be, because it's not favorable. So we most appropriately would put this kind of arrow. But I won't require you to make lopsided arrows like this. But I know this general question of, wait, when do we use what kind of arrow? Well, this is exactly how we could discuss it. This is a deprotonation, which is reversible in this case, because you're trying to go from a weak acid to a strong acid. And so, if you had hydroxide that you tried to use as your base, it might work for an aldol condensation, for example. But it won't work well here. Yes? Not worried about that at the moment. More worried about pKa differences. So, if we want to make the enolate and make sure that we don't have any other base component that's hanging around that might do a side reaction, we would really prefer to do something irreversible, wouldn't we? And that's where the molecule LDA comes in. Lithium diisopropyl. Now, I'm suddenly blanking. I think it's amide, but it's not the amide that you're used to. I think that is the negative ion name of an amine, which just coincidentally has the name amide as well, because IDE is the ending of a negative charge, amine, amide. What is this thing? What's isopropyl? Simple, right? So there's diisopropyl that would otherwise be an amine, which means to be neutral, it should have a hydrogen on it. If this is a lithium salt, then you'll have two lone pairs on that nitrogen instead. How do you synthesize this? In the lab, it's synthesized by taking butyl lithium and reacting it with diisopropyl amine, the neutral compound. My memory is that this has a pKa of about 40, I think it is. I better check that number. So make a note to myself. I need to look up what happens with alpha halogenation of acids if you have two alpha groups. And what is the pKa of LDA's conjugate? Point being, that's a really, really strong base that we've just made. And so, if you take a ketone and react it with LDA, Well, first of all, given the steric hindrance around LDA, it's not likely to attack the carbonyl. It's a strong base, so it easily pulls that hydrogen off. Because it has a pKa of somewhere around 40 versus the ketone's pKa of 19, this is by far a forward-only reaction. I'm guessing 40. But I want to check that value, make sure I memorized that one correctly. Amines I don't remember as easily for some reason. Even if I'm off by one or two units, there's still a huge difference, though, between these two compounds' acidity. So in this case, the reaction's forward only. Because the reagents are cheap and making LDA in the lab is relatively straightforward, it's very, very frequently used in these enolate reactions. And so if I wanted to write not a mechanism, but a synthesis for doing alpha alkylation, ideally I'll do it like this. Take aldehyde or ketone, react it first with LDA to make the enolate. And then since we're doing alpha alkylation, I'll just say Rx in general. And that lets us add an R group at the alpha position. Questions? Then, I want to show you another related reaction. That will require you to do some mechanism practice. In fact, maybe I'll ask someone to discuss the mechanism on Friday. This is the stored enamine synthesis. Enamines, when have we last seen those? Last quarter, right? What is an enamine? It's an alkene and an amine. Something like that. With a lone pair. Are enamines thermodynamically stable? That's a loaded question, because maybe they're the only product that can form in certain reactions. So in this case, with two R groups on the nitrogen, it cannot tautomerize. So yes, this is thermodynamically stable because it has no choice. So not all enamines are unsynthesizable. It's just you have to use the right amine. Do we need to have a rediscussion of enamines versus imines, or can I ask you to go back to 12B's notes? Who would like the 60 or the 90 second version of imines versus enamines? Okay. So if you have, there's the two or three that raised your hands, and there's 20 others that are saying, please somebody raise their hand so I don't have to be the one that's raising the hand. So you all should raise your hands, because in these few instances where I ask what you want, that I'll give it to you if you want it. So yes, this classroom is not an example of democracy. If we have a primary amine, there are two hydrogens on that nitrogen. One hydrogen comes off during the first protonate open attack deprotonate cycle to make what's called a carbonylamine. For the new people that are in the class, since I'm moving quickly enough today, let me very rapidly write a mechanism for this. Protonate. Open. Oh, gosh. Okay, so when you go back to the textbook and study this, though, They're not going to do it this way. Sorry, I'm forgetting. I'm playing with an amine, which is a base, which they, for that reason, they justify doing it this way, where they have the attack occur before protonation. So, attack, protonate, attack and open together, deprotonate, or reprotonate. Deprotonate, because we still got an ammonium salt. And we've made the intermediate, which is called a carbonylamine. But in other words, we need at least one hydrogen. I just blindly circled the other one, but you lose one hydrogen at this point to get through the first round of protonate, open attack, deprotonate. If you went through another round of protonate, open, attack through resonance, oh, and I dropped the hydrogen long back, sorry. Then look what we got here. We have to deprotonate again in order to be able to end up with an imine. So without writing the whole mechanism again, let me just say that if you don't have a primary amine, if you use a secondary instead, it only has one hydrogen that can be removed. So the intermediate carbonylamine we could still get. But there is no hydrogen that can come off at this point. So now if you push the reaction forward, the only thing that can form is for the double bond to form next door, you could say. That part, I'll let you all go back and review what the mechanism's for. I'll ask for that mechanism on Friday. But now let's move on to the point of what this stork enamine synthesis is. Because let's say that you did want to do one of these alkylations, and let's say you were worried about the fact that an enolate is a strong base. And so let's say you're worried about your substrate doing elimination or some other reaction that's unwanted by the presence of the base. So wouldn't it be great if we had some other way to do a kindler, gentler reaction, to use a phrase that hasn't come up in a long time? Well, what would you get if you did the following? Which, heads up, that is not parole. That is not parole. Why would parole be a horrible choice of reagent? I know you don't even know what the product's coming, but knowing that nitrogen reacts through its lone pair, why would parole be a horrible choice of compound to use at this point? Word stable's not enough. It's aromatic. Why is it aromatic? What is pyrrole, for those of you who've forgotten what pyrrole is? The lone pair is part of the aromatic system, isn't it? If it's part of the aromatic system, you'd have to break aromaticity in order for that lone pair to react. This normally I talk about when we get to the amine chapter. But since I've used the cyclic amine over here, I've got to point out that it's not pyrrole. Which, go ahead, ask it, because I happen to not remember.
What's the name of it then?
I don't know, but I'll look it up. Because I knew we needed to cover the reaction today, but I didn't think enough steps ahead to say, oh yeah, I need to know the name of that thing. The hydrogen, I just ran out of room, so yes, there's a hydrogen on it. The product, when you react these two things together, is going to be an enamine. Now, compared to regular alkene, what is the proportion of electron density on the more substituted carbon of the alkene versus the less substituted?
More has more negative.
Has more negative where?
No.
But you had a 50-50 chance. Because if you draw a resonance structure, we end up with a positively charged nitrogen, which is not that bad. Nitrogen doesn't mind being positively charged. Just like oxygen negative, yeah, you can't isolate a negative charge all by itself, but it's easy to form a compound with an oxygen that's negatively charged. So this is a non-trivial resonance structure. And it shows that there's a little bit greater proportion of negative charge on that one carbon than you'd have in a plain alkene. Well, this means it's an alpha alkylating reagent. As another aside, again, something that you need to consider. If you had just a plain old amine, will a reaction occur between these two molecules? What kind of reaction is the only reaction possible? Can SN2 happen? Do we have a primary substrate? Yes, we have a primary alkyl halide. Do we have a strong nucleophile? Do we have a nucleophile that's stronger than water at least? Ooh. Because what makes something a good nucleophile? It helps to have a lone pair, helps to be negatively charged, but isn't the nitrogen here basic? Is an oxygen and an ether basic? Is an oxygen in an ether basic? No. No, we don't protonate ethers. They're generally non-reactive. You have, in fact, we never did cover the hydrolysis of ethers, but it requires hydroiodic or hydrobromic acid. Really strong conditions to break up an ether. The point of asking that was to say if oxygen is not basic, and this is, then this is a better nucleophile than water, and this will undergo SN2 by itself. You might think, why didn't you ever show us that before, Dr. Gray? That's just a simple amine. That would have been a useful reaction for us to know. Because it doesn't stop here. Because once you add an alkyl group, an amine's even more basic. And so it keeps on going and going until you get a quaternary ammonium salt. So I didn't show this to you back in the days of SN2 because I would have had to explain amine chemistry at that time, which would have just blown you all out of the water. So coming back to this, though, the stork enamine reaction, this is the justification for saying that this thing that's a neutral compound that looks like an enol and therefore could do an enolate-style mechanism, it's going to happen. You take this thing,
this enamine thing and react it with still a primary substrate. I don't recall without looking it up if a secondary can occur. But it can do an alpha alkylation. Let me think through that mechanism for a moment. Yes. You'll come back to this. And then, upon treatment with water and acid, we decompose the enamine back to the ketone or aldehyde it was formed from. I'll let you know that the mechanism for this showed up either on the final or an exam either last year or 2 years ago. So I'll ask this question. What is the mechanism? Maybe we'll discuss it on Friday. Questions about this enamine synthesis. So this is, let me back up, because I know the lot's starting to come at you. We've started today first with just reviewing a bit about the alpha halogenation. That, I don't think, generated too much concern. I then moved on to alpha alkylation. And then we got off on what LDA is and why it's often used in these alpha alkylations or other enolate reactions. Because it's also an alkylation, I then moved on to the stork enamine synthesis, which normally I cover last because it's a nitrogen reaction and it's not related directly to any of the other condensations we're going to do. But I kind of like the way your textbook did it because these are alkylations and they're related that way. So this is an alternate alkylation, and maybe since I said it out loud but I didn't write it down, I will say the stork enamine synthesis is useful because no strong bases are used, which can allow more sensitive substrates to be used in alkylation reactions. New students, if you're not familiar with this term substrate, I got tired of trying to figure out the right word to mean the thing that gets attacked in an SN2 reaction. Saw someone use the word substrate, and it's like, that's the word. And so now that's what I use. Substrate meaning the main molecule getting attacked in this reaction, which you make the enolate and attacks this substrate. So, what do we have left? A lot. Given that section 2 hasn't seen the joy of the Michael edition yet, I think I'll skip that just for the moment. And I know we still have the aldol condensation I promised you that I was going to review. But given the limited amount of time, I want to show you something else. In case I have... How can I phrase this? In case I've fostered within you the desire and the need to read chapter 19. Because I want to show you the Claisen condensation. For two reasons. There is a topic I'm going to revisit because I know it caused confusion when I presented to you last. Will alpha deprotonation be possible under these conditions? What's the pKa of the alpha proton of the ester? 24. What is the pKa of water? That's a lot of difference in pKa. So I'll say the reaction's not really favorable. But you also need to tell me that you're not even going to be able to deprotonate because you're going to saponify instead. Is alpha deprotonation possible here? No, because it's a stronger base than hydroxide, but not strong enough. And don't forget, you'll also get transesterification. These reagents cannot be used to alpha deprotonate because they are not strong enough bases. And depending on the type of ester, will cause, well, hydroxide is going to cause saponification. But with the right alkoxide, you can get transesterification. I'm still going to revisit this topic again, because I know that there's still some confusion. Why do we care about what base? And I'll give you some better examples. But let's get to the point for this chapter. If I take this ester, which, what's the name of this ester?
Reverse.
No, it's not a reverse ester. And that term we would need to compare with something else to use that term, but interesting term. But what is its proper name? Ethyl propanoate. If I use LDA, that's a strong, strong base. And we can make an enolate out of an ester, which if there's another ester around, what does that mean? It means more fun mechanisms. Yes, I use those two words in the same sentence, fun and mechanism. So, like other condensations, the carbonyl that went away when we made the enolate comes back when it reacts. You make a new carbon-carbon bond, which at that position we currently have an oxygen negative and an ether. Well, we've seen many times before that if you take that alkoxide, let it condense back, we're able to kick out an alkoxide, which means we have made a beta keto ester. Because beta to the ester is a ketone. And it is the product of a Claisen condensation. We're out of time, so any quick questions? All righty, see you Friday, unless there really is some important event that has just dropped off my calendar, and then I will email you all. But since none of the other chemists today were talking about it, I'm wondering if it's something some other part of campus is doing. But I will find out.